Live from the Canon Valerie Baker studio at WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Ask Governor Meyer. I'm Shirley Min. This is our second episode, and this evening is another chance for Delawareans to hear directly from their governor and to ask questions in real time. Our show is produced by WHYY and Delaware Public Media, with editorial independence from the governor's office. We alone have prepared the questions and the topics, and our producers will be screening calls for clarity and relevance only. We welcome the diverse opinions of our audience. So with me in our Philadelphia studio, Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. Governor Meyer, great to have you again.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for welcoming me back, Shirley.
We are also joined by two journalists who will add their questions to the mix. Sarah Mueller is the Delaware politics reporter at WHYY News. And Tom Byrne is Delaware Public Media's news director. So welcome to you both.
Thanks very much.
We're going to move through a series of topics this hour, like property assessment, cost of living, clean energy, and now's the time for audience members to join the conversation. So call 888-477-9499. You can email askgovmeyer@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, just drop your comment in the chat. So we're going to start with a subject that's top of mind for a lot of people, the federal government shutdown, and specifically its impact on federal food stamps. So WHYY, Sarah Mueller, your question.
SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, issues $21 million in benefits each month to 60,000 Delaware families. The program saw the largest cut in its history earlier this year. Now recipients won't get their benefits at all next month because of the shutdown. Delaware Congresswoman Sarah McBride says it's an assault on food assistance by the Trump administration.
They have chosen to call these programs, quote, Democrat programs, and they believe that they are punishing people who they presume didn't vote for them in the last election.
Can the state backfill these funds? If not, what more can the administration do to help Delaware families who depend on this help?
Listen, thanks, Sarah. I appreciate the question. It's really important to not, you said 60,000 families that get this. We estimate it's about 120,000 Delawareans who directly benefit from SNAP. Something I think about every day, we have an obligation to protect our state and our people. And there's a lot more to try and protect them from, given what's going on in the White House right now and what's going on in Washington. But the reality is simply trying to weather the bad news coming out of Washington, the lack of dollars, isn't good enough. We owe it to our kids to make sure they're prepared. We owe it to seniors to make sure they're safe. We owe it to families to make sure that they have food. Many of these families are working American families who deserve this assistance. Delawareans, like Americans, are paying into the federal tax system, and the return we're getting just isn't what it was months ago. What we're going to do, I should first say, it simply is not, I'm a math teacher, it's simply not practical when you look at not just SNAP, but you look at the WIC programs, Women, Infant, and Children programs. When you look at LIHEAP, Low Income Heating and Energy Assistance Program, the programs that we expect in the coming weeks will fall off and will dry up and there will not be money. We simply don't have the resources in our state budget to backfill everything. With respect to SNAP, actually, we legally are not able to load money onto the SNAP cards. That's done by the federal government through the federal program. So the short answer is we're working with our food banks. We're working with local religious institutions, incredible groups like Meals on Wheels, to make sure that during this crazy time, we're doing everything we can to protect the most vulnerable families that really need food and nutrition.
And it's a shame because these, like the food bank, they're already pressured. And so now we are adding insult to injury now with the cuts and SNAP.
Can I just say one? Like, as an American in 2025, this is insane. Mm-hmm. We have, in many ways, the most prosperous country or the most prosperous society in world history. We have more trillion-dollar companies than I think ever imaginable And we're not able to feed people because of our own dysfunction. It's embarrassing. And I can tell you in Delaware, we're going to do everything we can to fulfill the promise of America that everybody deserves.
We're going to transition to the crisis of homelessness. Sarah, you have another question.
The number of homeless people in Delaware is rising, with 40% of unhoused individuals in the city of Wilmington. Here's Debbie Pyle. She's been living on the street since 2019.
There's nothing good about being homeless. Nothing. Because you're looked down on. They think you're nothing. You're a piece of crap.
Advocates say Wilmington needs more shelter beds and permanent housing. But the mayor's office says homeless services are primarily a state function. So what can your administration do to reduce the number of homeless people in the state?
Look, I think it's a city function, a county function, a state function, and a federal function. We all need to work together. I wrote my thesis in college on the McKinney Act, on the implementation of the McKinney Act, which is a federal act now updated as McKinney-Vento, that makes sure that homeless children can get an education to break intergenerational cycles of poverty. I think you know, many of my listeners know my history at the county of purchasing one of the largest hotels in the state and turning it into the largest and most comprehensive shelter in our state's history, a 192-room shelter that now has provided housing for, I think, over 7,000 Delawareans, provided ways out of homelessness for hundreds and hundreds of Delaware families. I think the only solutions are comprehensive solutions. If you just provide a home for someone, it's very often not enough. Very often the root causes of homelessness are job loss, are domestic situations, are mental health, substance use. It's a little bit different for every person, but if you don't have a comprehensive solution like we did with the Hope Center, so what we're looking to do is partner both with local governments and the federal government to expand on what we've learned from facilities like the Hope Center, to partner with private organizations and hospitals who often bear the financial brunt of homelessness, to make sure that we're providing the highest quality services to individuals, both to provide emergency housing and provide long-term supportive housing.
Okay, we have a follow-up from Tom Byrne.
Yeah, you mentioned the Hope Center. Down in Georgetown, another type of effort was the Powell Villages that they have started down there. That's a small village with transitional one-bedroom cabins with shared bathrooms and some associated services with them. Other communities like Milford and Newark are looking at that particular model now, but location and cost seem to be barriers. Could the state play a role in helping overcome those roadblocks and duplicate Powell Village models elsewhere in the state?
Yes.
Is there specific ways you can do that, particularly with the ideas of the cost, and I think the location has also become a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying it's easy. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, yes, we'll do it tomorrow. Right?
Right.
These are not
right.
easy. The Hope Center was not easy. The Pallet Village in Georgetown, extraordinary work. Wasn't easy to get off the ground. Took Jeb, I think, years and years to get it off the ground. And they're still refining the model. But yes, the state needs to be a partner in efforts like that, and needs to work to make sure that they're comprehensive. So for example, often when people look at it, they look at the startup costs, right? What's it going to cost to get one of these things off the ground? My experience with the Hope Center is that's hard, but that's a lot easier than the ongoing operational cost, right? So those are two issues. But in addition to just the cost, there's other services. At the Hope Center, for example, the Bridge Clinic, which is a service of the State Department of Health and Social Services, the Bridge Clinic actually located an office within the Hope Center. That decision by Governor Carney, my predecessor, and the Secretary of Health and Social Services, who I believe is Molly McGarrick, their decision at the time was critical to the success of that facility. So making sure that all these different governmental levels and some private partnership as well is all working together is critical to make any of these projects a success.
We have a comment on YouTube from Wyeth. He writes, "What's your opinion about Wilmington letting the homeless just live in a space that used to be for kids as a baseball field?"
I can look into that specific situation. I really think many of these local neighborhoods, like when you go neighborhood by neighborhood or street by street, and it's there are issues that mm-hmm. parents and families legitimately have of people sleeping places and potentially causing danger in the neighborhood. I think the only solution in time, the only solution is a comprehensive solution. It's a solution where local, state, and federal resources are brought to bear to solve what is really a very challenging, complex problem.
Can I ask a question? The mayor of Wilmington is talking about having Christina Park be the only place where people can have encampments. It would be limited to 28 tents. Is that really enough to tackle the problem, especially in Wilmington, of homelessness?
Yeah, I think we need comprehensive solutions in time. I understand what the mayor's trying to do. You want to make sure that certainly as we go into these winter months, everybody has a safe place. If they're all in a single location, it's much easier for the mayor and for the state, quite frankly, to deliver quality services. But I think ultimately we need to find a place other than a park for people to live.
Okay, so a lot of our audience really wants to hear from you about a proposed mega shopping center in Sussex County. We received a ton mm-hmm. of emails from residents who say that the highway traffic in that area is already terrible, that this is going to harm the environment, homeowners, first responders, schools. Developers are saying it will bring jobs to the area and that they will spend millions on transportation improvement. Do you support the project? And can you address residents who are against it?
I don't have a particular position on that project. I know that neighbors feel very strongly about it. I believe very strongly, as someone who spent 8 years in local government, that neighbors and communities should have a say in their future. We need to make sure that property rights are balanced with, you know, community infrastructure. We have to make sure that DLDOT, in our purpose in state government, we're making sure that we're not approving projects that are going to gnarl traffic. And so for years and years to come, residents who bought into a community suddenly can't go out driving at certain times during the day. We have to make sure the schools are well funded. I know there's been a lot of issues about school impact fees. We got to make sure that any developer is paying their fair share. But in terms of the details of the project, I have not seen the traffic studies. I haven't looked at the environmental studies.
Governor, would those projects be more palatable if they had a housing element, specifically a workforce housing element to them?
I think generally, I did read a story where it referenced that. Maybe you wrote it, Tom. But I did, where there was, the current plan as is does not include affordable or workforce housing. And so there's obviously a lot of question, as there has been in that area of the state for a long time. Where are the workers going to actually live? If you look at the salaries, there's nowhere in the area that they live. What we're trying to do at the state, it is really put energy, attention, and funding behind our state planning processes. This has taken decades to get into these real serious growth problems, particularly in the coastal communities, and now some of the like near coastal communities. And it's going to take some time to get out of it, but we have to make sure the planning and zoning is crystal clear, and that as we look forward 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road, we're planning and investing appropriately for communities that are sustainable, that have the health, that address the healthcare needs, that address the traffic needs, the educational needs, and the like.
I want to get to some submitted questions, but before I do, I just want to remind you how you can ask your questions of Governor Meyer. You can call 888-477-9499. Email askgovmeyer@whyy.org, or of course, watch on YouTube or Facebook and then drop your comment in there. Nate in Dover submitted a question. He writes, so many scenic places, farms, historic buildings are being lost. Just in the last 2 years, my city lost one of its most elegant buildings to a hospital parking lot, and a parking garage is now planned on one of my favorite streets. What will you do to align the state's budget priorities to historic preservation and hold your agencies accountable when they ignore historic and scenic resources in development plans?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I agree. As someone who grew up in Delaware, when you see some of these beautiful historic structures, mm-hmm. and I'd add to that some of the tremendous and beautiful open spaces and landscape, once they're destroyed, they don't come back. They're gone forever. I think part of it is a question of regulation, making sure whether it's the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control or a local, like at Newcastle County, we had a historic review board. I think each of the counties have some sort of historic board, making sure they are empowered to make, you know, sometimes hard decisions to say, no, you can't do this, or it needs to be renovated or refurbished. And that's part of it. There's also a funding element, though. I found most of the time, in my experience in local government, when there were historic structures that wanted to be preserved, a lot of people wanted to preserve them. They often were in disrepair, but there just wasn't the resources. There wasn't the private resources to restore them. So I committed as a county official, I'll continue to commit as a state official to do everything I can to find the public resources to address situations like that. Now, it's harder now to say that than ever, as we may get to. We're looking at serious budget deficits that are going to make funding like this really challenging.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We've been speaking with Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. And again, here's how you can ask your questions. Call 888-477-9499. You can email askgovmeyer@whyy.org or watch on YouTube or Facebook, and then go ahead and drop your comments in the chat. This is Ask Governor Meyer. We'll be right back.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min. Governor Matt Meyer is taking questions from our two reporters, WHYY's Sarah Mueller and Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne, and from you, our audience. To add your voice to the conversation, call 888-477-9499, email askgovmeyer@whyy.org, or leave a comment on YouTube or Facebook. So, Governor Meyer, let's talk about money.
And that's too much of my job. Yeah.
And start with the state budget. Tom Byrne, your question.
You alluded to it before the break, Governor Meyer. There's a lot of issues cropping up even more now with the state budget, specifically federal corporate tax changes made in the Big Beautiful Bill Act that are projected to cost the state over $400 million over the next 2 years and leave Delaware $352 million less to spend in next year's budget than this year's. Some Democratic lawmakers just in the last couple of days have suggested a special session to discuss severing state corporate tax returns from federal ones before any of these Big Beautiful Bill Act changes take effect January 1st. Do you support that kind of immediate action to try and blunt some of these losses before they even start?
I do, Tom. Let me be clear. First off, the big bill so far in Delaware has not been very beautiful. We're staring down increases in cost to Medicaid, dramatic increases in cost to health insurance, so dramatic that the Democratic Congress is basically holding firm on saying that we need to revisit that before, you know, we go forward with a budget federally. And also this, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of lost resources to the state budget. The goal of that bill was to make the rich richer. Let's be clear, providing tremendous tax cuts for billionaires while ballooning our deficit. It just came out today that just under the Trump administration, the federal deficit has increased by $2 trillion. My guess is most people who voted for President Trump were not expecting that poor leadership. The consequence for us at the state is we got to make the numbers work. I'm a math teacher. We're losing hundreds of millions of dollars unless we do something. This is a problem that the federal government, that President Trump and the MAGA Republicans have created for the state of Delaware. It is a problem that we here in Delaware, Democrats and hopefully Republicans as well, are going to come together and solve, hopefully through a special session that will decouple with the federal tax law. So state tax law will be changed a little bit to enable us to get the resources to provide schools, housing, healthcare to hardworking Delawareans.
But even before all this, the state budget was seeing some pressures. And there was still a chance that, I think even your own budget director said that you could spend down the reserves in the next year plus and still find yourself in a deficit in FY28. So are there some levers you need to pull here? Do you need to revisit the extra bracket at the top of the tax brackets? Or is there other levers either on the revenue side or on the cost-cutting side that you need to start making real priorities next year?
So first of all, to answer at least one of the questions there, do I think it's fair that hardworking teachers, nurses in Delaware, underpaid, are paying the same tax rate as multimillionaires in Delaware? No, that's not fair. I've said that from day one. I ran on that. We proposed it in our first budget. So do I think there should be higher tax brackets? Do I think wealthier Delawareans should be paying at a higher rate? I do, especially when you look at what's going on at the federal level. However, let me say this about our state budget. Your first question about the impact of the Big Beautiful Bill on Delaware is really an immediate situation that if we don't address it right now, there's hundreds of millions of dollars that we got to find a way to cut out of our budget. The second question was about a structural problem mm-hmm. that's developed over a number of years and quite frankly can be fixed over a number of years. When I came in just 9 months ago, our state revenues were increasing at I think a 1.5% and our expenses were increasing at something like
7.4%, yeah.
Right? You're going to see in this budget a decrease in the expenses, right? In the budget we proposed, the expense growth. And I think I don't want to make promises I can't keep because we're still a few months away from announcing our budget. I think in our budget, you're going to see some increase in revenue. So what we're looking to do is not solve everything in day one, because that could be dramatic cuts to services and things that Delawareans truly rely on. But over time, bridge the two, bring those two numbers together so that our expenses and revenue start matching up.
Delawareans are facing rising costs from prices at the grocery store to tolls, DMV fees, and there's even the possibility of higher state park fees. Many residents are struggling to pay higher energy bills. Delmarva Power wants to increase its gas bills by about 43%, while Chesapeake is asking for a 30% bump. This is Belafonte resident Nicole Logan.
You really shouldn't have the ability as a public utility to spike a rate 25% in one go. That rate increase for us, a family of four, is almost $1,700 a year.
Can the state and the public advocate do anything to lower rates for Delawareans?
I think they can and we can. The increase in energy bills is totally unacceptable and intolerable, and the math doesn't add up for too many Delaware families. It's important to understand this is not a problem that we woke up to one day. It's a problem that we got into over years. We got into this problem as a society and as a region under investing in energy, so that there just hasn't been many new energy projects in Delaware. PJM, which is the regional regulator of energy, has limited the rate at which new projects come on the grid, which means there's a shortage of energy supply. There are new projects, which I imagine we'll talk about, that are putting tremendous new demand on the grid, and that is spiking costs. I also think we have to be honest. Delmarva is a for-profit company. They're trying to pump rates up as much as they can. That's why it's vitally important the public advocate and the Public Service Commission scrutinize things like this, and wherever they can, keep cut costs and keep rates low for Delaware families. And I hope others across the region do the same.
Governor, I want to bring a caller in now. This is Stefan from New Castle County. Stefan, what's your question?
Hi, Governor Meyer. Thank you for taking my call tonight. Just wanted to ask, in Delaware, pretty much all over, I would say speeding is a problem where everyone's just going well above the posted speed limits. And also, there tends to be a lot of illegal street races at night. I want to know if the state is doing anything to try and curtail the speeding and these illegal street races.
Great. So it's a great question. Can we have an interaction? Can you talk to me? Stefan, do you hear me?
Yep.
What do you think of automated speed enforcement?
I've always kind of been against it just because of having cameras around and, taking photos, and there's almost like no leeway with it. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just going to and from work or out to the grocery store. You know, everyone's going like 10 to 15 miles above the posted speed limits with neighborhoods around, and even in the morning when there are kids waiting at bus stops. And I think it's just become at a point where I don't even think you can have enough cops around to, like, you know, show force and say, hey, everybody, if you speed, you're going to get caught. But I think at this point, you know, we may need to go in that direction.
So I appreciate that. So here's what we're doing. We have put speed cameras in places, in construction zones, for the safety of workers as a pilot in the past year or two. We also have started to put speed cameras, often in collaboration with local police departments, police agencies, in areas where there's a clear, documented, data-driven record of speed contributing to lack of safety, to danger. Both of those programs have been pretty successful. And so, Stefan, if there's a specific area that you are concerned about, I encourage you to either reach out to your local police department, or you can email me directly at matthew.meyer@delaware.gov. Tell me where the area is, and I'd be happy to make sure my office looks into it.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan. I want to have you address a few comments we've received. Donald from Millsboro writes, wastewater facilities in Sussex County are causing massive pollution. Why is nothing being done? And connected with that, Paul from Millsboro writes, there's a water crisis in Millsboro. What are you going to do? And Noel in Millsboro has written, we have high levels of forever chemicals. My whole house and neighbors need answers and solutions. So these are three comments that we sort of...
All from Millsboro. So it's Donald's concerned about wastewater pollution. Paul is concerned about shortage of water. And
the forever chemicals.
Forever chemicals. In terms of if Donald is aware of a specific, like a specific wastewater area where there is pollution, I encourage you to reach out to DENREC, to the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, or reach out to me directly, again, at matthew.meyer@delaware.gov. In terms of Paul and Millsboro, our clean water resources come from water utilities, as Paul probably knows, and we work with them on a round-the-clock basis to make sure safe, affordable water is being delivered to you. And if that's not the case in Millsboro or anywhere in the state, make sure we're made aware of it. I'm happy to talk to the team about the situation in Millsboro. Forever chemicals, I know there's been quite a bit of litigation about PFAS and things like that, making sure that those who are responsible for polluting our waterways in the past are contributing to its solution, and also making sure that we beef up our regulation. I also should add that in this time, and I've met with the EPA administrator in Washington, the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, I'm concerned that the protection that federal government has provided in prior years for things like clean water, they have expertise that often state governments do not have. And so we're working with DENREC to make sure that we're providing an extra layer of protection during this particularly challenging time.
Now, we know Delaware is a small state, right? So Donald has now said, so this is Donald from Millsboro, is continuing to say that he has actually met with you before, says you are aware of the chemicals in the water, but can you say more about what specifically you think should happen?
Look, I think we have an obligation to protect the air, land, and water for every Delaware family, for every Delaware community. And if there's a specific situation Donald's referring to, if we met, I cannot specifically recall Donald telling me of a specific place of concern, but there's a specific place of concern. I'll make sure somebody goes out, checks it out, and we do appropriate research to make sure people are safe.
Okay, we're going to pick up on an important topic we discussed last month, which is energy. Tom Byrne.
Governor, the proposed Project Washington Data Center, which you alluded to earlier, has prompted a number of responses. Newcastle County wants to put some guardrails in place on use of electricity and water and other things. Public Service Commission is working on a large load tariff to mitigate any costs connecting a massive data center to a local grid might have for local residential ratepayers. Is that those things an adequate response, given that this data center is likely to come online and start using energy well before any work could be done to add capacity or improve infrastructure.
Yeah, look, any company that comes, right, who's adding to the financial burden of surrounding communities, who's adding to the environmental burden of surrounding communities, needs to pay for that or needs to take action to reduce those harms. That's the basis of the large load tariff that I strongly support, that the public advocate is appropriately advocating in public for. Large load tariff is about basically saying for large energy users, like a data center, if you're going to come, you can't just come and draw from the grid. And often what happens when they go to public utilities, because they're such a large user, they get a better rate, right? What we're saying is, no, we're going to, you need to pay not just for the rate of the energy you're getting, but for the cost, the increased cost in energy that surrounding communities are going to face. So I think that's right. Water usage is also potentially a concern. I don't quite recall with Project Washington, but quite a few of these data center developers are claiming that they have new technology that reduces their water usage. But we just have to make sure that any project that comes into our state of any type, that we're taking the appropriate steps to protect surrounding communities, protect them financially, and protect them environmentally.
Governor, Delaware was one of many coastal states pounded by that nor'easter earlier this month, suffering substantial dune damage and some beach erosion as well. This week, you asked President Trump to have the Army Corps of Engineers invoke its emergency restoration authority to restore public beaches and critical coastal storm damage reduction structures. First of all, have you gotten any response to that letter?
I have not.
What kind of vulnerability does Delaware have if nothing is done the next time a nor'easter or some other storm comes up the coast?
So, first of all, the fear is that those in Washington, as we say, like to have their Dewey Beach ice cream and eat it too. So a lot of the people, the policymakers in Washington who are cutting funding for basic environmental needs like beach restoration are coming to the Delaware beaches to vacation, which is an interesting irony. We in the state are spending a tremendous amount of resource, $21 million, I think, on coastal restoration, another $6 million around Indian River inlet restoration. What I'm trying to do is stop the constant beach erosion and flooding that happens every time there's any kind of storm that rolls in, which in my short time as governor, I think has already been twice. It's happening 2-3 times a year. There are things the state government can do. And there's a lot more that we can do with federal government partnership. So that was the purpose of the letter. There is a very clear provision where the Army Corps could come in, use emergency powers to restore our coast. In terms of what happens if we don't get it, there is a constant existential risk to the beach economy. There's an existential risk to the sustainability, long-term sustainability of the environment in those communities. There have been studies that show within decades, a sizable percentage of Bethany Beach, for example, is going to be underwater unless we take appropriate precautions. I think that the state can try to do it. It's going to happen a lot faster and in a lot more sustainable way if we can do it in partnership with federal government.
Before we get to the break, just want to ask this listener question. Richard in Wilmington writes, before my daily walk, have to check the air quality index. Some pollution could be from a faraway forest fire to our north, but also there are habitual offenders inside Delaware. How can you crack down on the lawbreakers?
I appreciate the question. Something that I'm, as someone who has kids outside, and for my own health, I actually have asthma. So it's always been of particular concern to me. We have air quality monitors at various places around the state. If I think Richard was his name, if he has a particular concern, please reach out to my office or reach out to DENREC, the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control. We will get an air quality monitor out to that area and we'll start monitoring.
Okay. All right. Time to take another short break. We will be right back with more Ask Governor Meyer.
Thank you.
You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min. If you're just joining us, we've covered housing for the homeless, data centers, and more with Governor Matt Meyer. We have much more to talk about, but it's time for some rapid-fire questions from our audience. Governor Meyer, we ask that you try to answer each of these in about 30 seconds. Jason in Wilmington asks, I would love to see ranked choice voting implemented in the state. It solves the common problem of vote splitting, encourages civility, and can re-engage voters who feel they do not have a voice. Is this an upgrade you'd be willing to discuss?
Yeah, I'd absolutely be willing to discuss it. I think there are some generally, I like ranked choice. There's always this thing like, I really like someone, but do they have a chance of winning? And I only mm-hmm. I don't want to, quote unquote, waste my vote. And ranked choice eliminates that problem. I think there are some other problems we've seen, like in the New York City mayoral primary. I thought it was kind of weird that in the days leading up to the election, there were like strange alliances between candidates. Mm. I don't know if that's necessarily healthy for democracy. But the short answer to this question is yes, I'm very open to discussing ranked choice voting in Delaware.
Julia Milton writes, I recently used the mobile DMV trailer. I was waited on quickly and efficiently, and my business was completed in about 10 minutes. That's unheard. That's crazy. Right now, the trailers are there for part of the year. Could we offer this service year round?
It is noted. Thank you. It's good to finally a question. We're doing something right. That is good to hear. And it is noted. Thank
okay.
you.
Anonymous listener in Newcastle, have you considered a community service program where volunteers drive around to pick up trash on the roads? Delaware County, PA does this in their Keep Delco Beautiful initiative.
Yeah, we had a Keep DE Litter Free initiative mm-hmm. that my predecessor, Governor Carney, was passionate about. And I like that kind of a volunteer community service-based system. I know the Adopt a Road program that mm-hmm. DelDOT has been quite successful, and we're certainly open to looking at new ways both to engage Delawareans in keeping communities clean and also keeping our roads clean.
Okay. You did really well answering those in 30 seconds. All right. So we'd like to follow up on the topic of property assessments mm-hmm. with Sarah.
Delaware's Chancery Court held a hearing this week about a law allowing Newcastle County school districts to set higher rates for commercial properties. Landlords are suing the state, the county, and local school districts. They say the county's bombshell that they have to fix thousands of errors, shifting more than $1 billion in assessed value from residential to commercial properties, highlights its flawed rollout of the law. The county kept the issue under wraps for weeks, only breaking its silence in court filings earlier this month. Are you concerned the county's disclosure damages your side's case?
Look, I appreciate the question, Sarah. I'm not going to comment on pending litigation, but I will say this. As government, we have a responsibility with property taxes to, number one, make sure your assessment is correct, right? That's a basic pledge that we have as government to the people. It can't be some sort of number, an assessment number that has no real correlation to the actual value of your home, your workplace, whatever. That's the first thing. The second obligation we have that I feel every day is we need to make sure every penny of taxes that you pay is used responsibly and efficiently. So I understand a lot of the heartache that Delawareans feel today, saying, oh my God, my tax assessment went way up, or my tax bill went way up. What am I getting for this, right? Imagine if you went to the supermarket and the price of milk went up 80% and the size of the milk was the same and the quality was the same. We have an obligation to get the assessed values right. And I think putting aside the case, there's no doubt that there's still some very, very valuable properties, some of the most valuable properties in Newcastle County. The assessments today, as I talked to you, are wrong. And we need to make sure the county assessment office needs to make sure those are corrected. But we also need to make sure whether those property taxes are paying for police or paramedics or parks or libraries or probably most importantly our schools, that money is being used efficiently.
But the county only brought this to light in the court filings. Why do you think it didn't alert the public about this before it put it in the court filings.
Again, I'm not going to, that's about pending litigation. I'm not.
It's about transparency.
I think that the county government, the state government, we need to be transparent about what's going on.
Okay, we're going to move on to education here, which is a critical issue in the state, where 41% of students in grades 3 through 8 are reading at or above grade level, according to national test scores, 41%. We are going to start this topic off with a call from Jason in North Wilmington. Go ahead, Jason. What's your question for Governor Meyer?
Hey, appreciate it. Hi, Governor Meyer. So I think our teachers, I have kids in the Brandywine School District, are doing a wonderful job. I think that a lot of them are just overwhelmed, especially K through 6. So my question is, if we shifted more funding from administrative and construction towards hiring more classroom teachers, or, you know, dividing classes up, essentially just creating a better student-teacher ratio. I know that, you know, in a lot of districts in Pennsylvania, just across the border, that is a high selling point for taxpayers to move there. So smaller classes, you know, obviously don't just help kids. They make Delaware a place for more families to want to move, stay, pay taxes. So my question is there anything being done to make sure that this becomes a priority statewide?
Great. Thank you, Jason. First of all, I'm a former Brandywine School District student and a Brandywine School District parent myself. So I appreciate the question. I also am a former teacher, so I appreciate the shout out to teachers. A few things. First of all, I think there are too many districts in Delaware, and I think there are too many school districts in northern Newcastle County. There's a Reading Consortium. There's a group meeting now to look at the district alignment. I think a critical part of that, especially when you look at what we just spoke about with reassessment and using dollars efficiently, is making sure we don't have several people across northern Newcastle County doing effectively the same job because there are all these districts. I like to say that if you asked every human being on earth to draw a school district map of northern Newcastle County, I don't think a single human being would draw it the way it's actually drawn. I think there needs to be a single district for northern Newcastle County, which I think would enable us to put more money where it belongs, which is in the classroom. If you take a classroom of 20 students today, we pay roughly in the neighborhood of $20,000 per student. That's $400,000 per classroom, roughly, that many schools have, but the money's not getting to the classroom, right? With teachers who I think, in my view, are underpaid. Jason, we did take action this year following years of work in a teacher compensation commission. We increased teacher salaries. We're looking to make Delaware school teacher salaries more competitive than ever. And again, by hopefully cutting out some of the administrative expense in time, we'll be able to look at taxpayers and say, we are using your dollar more efficiently than ever to get dollars to the classroom. And one other thing I should add, this year, a critical part of my first budget was doing something that Delaware schools had never done before. And that is, I always was frustrated as a teacher that you're, as I said, in these classrooms, $300,000, $400,000 is spent on the classroom and you see very little of it in the class. You often need to use your own money. Teachers are using their own money to buy, in my case, math manipulatives for reading teachers, reading books for kids. What we did is we took some of our budget and we said, if any teacher in this state has a project for the classroom, we're not even going to tell you what the project is. We're not going to give you the curriculum. You tell us what works for your kids. We're going to give you, I think it's $1,000 of stuff to make it happen, stuff that you pick. And we just started this 10 days ago. We opened it up. We got it through in the budget in June, thanks to the partnership of the Delaware State Legislature. We opened it up like 10 days ago. We weren't sure if any teachers would take us up on our offer. To date, about a third of the teachers statewide have taken advantage of these programs. We're talking about 3,229 classrooms as of this morning have new literacy projects, not developed by me, not developed in our state Department of Education, but developed uniquely by the teacher for their classroom.
Okay, Tom Byrne has a question.
Speaking of funding and education, at a meeting last week, the Public Education Funding Commission continued its work on a new hybrid education funding formula to better address the needs of high-need students. It started filling in some of the blanks and using current funding levels and making a larger percentage of the money more flexible. It envisions a five-fold increase in funds for low-income students and tripling funding targeting multilingual learners. Is this the kind of work that you were looking to see, the progress you were looking to see? And is it on the timeline you want it to be now?
Yeah. Tom, you know, in my office, they talk about Governor Meyer time. I want everything done by tomorrow morning, especially when it comes to kids and especially when it comes to kids' education. I think with respect to our schools, too many poor kids, too many kids of color don't have access to a high quality education right now in Delaware. Part of that is a problem of funding, and part of that is a problem of just basic accountability. There are situations you can find, to be frank, where there is significant dollar being spent on education for both poor kids and wealthy kids, and the outcomes simply are not there. In those cases, we need to work to make sure there's accountability. It's not really a money problem. It's a problem in terms of where the money is going and making sure that it's being used for the outcomes that we expect. In other places, there is a money problem, and I think the Public Education Funding Commission is highlighting that, and I'm following the work closely, and we're hoping, of course, when it gets down to budget and dollars and cents, it's very tough, certainly in this environment, mm-hmm. but we're looking to make sure we can back our words up with dollars to make sure dollars go where they're most needed.
I want to get to some listener questions. Listener Richard in Wyoming, Delaware, wants to know, is the state considering education vouchers for grades K to 12?
We are not, no.
That's
How's
it.
That for rapid fire?
Just not a fan of education vouchers.
I'm a big fan of public school choice. Mm-hmm. I think parents and kids should have an opportunity to choose among public schools. When you start taking money out of the public system and giving it to the private and parochial system, it creates a whole host of very well-documented problems that I just don't think Delaware should get into. And quite frankly, gets into those problems without any noticeable data-driven outcome, positive outcomes for kids or families.
Okay. Maria and Bear writes, I'm a teacher in a Newcastle County school district with a severe lack of qualified staff in our autism program. How will you and the legislature work to address the severe shortage of quality faculty working with our highest needs students?
Great. It's a fantastic question. Nothing is more important than making sure that children diagnosed with autism or special education children, children with special needs, have access to the highest quality education. I think it's really the hallmark of a developed society. I think people know. I lived in Iraq. I lived in Kenya. And one thing I constantly think about was the shortage of services and the really absence of high quality services for people with any kind of disability. It's horrific, kind of burned in my mind. And one thing that makes me proudest is when in Delaware, we can offer the highest quality services to those who are most in need. Now, it's easy to say. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, but it's easier to allocate money, but getting the actual people in the right places can be really challenging. We're doing things in the state like trying to provide a ladder so that if you're a paraprofessional mm-hmm. in a special education classroom and you're excelling, we make the pathway to being a teacher easy and seamless, both in terms of getting your certifications and getting some of the funding to fund your additional education, and also looking at pathways in high school. So when kids are starting to think about what they want to be when they grow up, there's a clear pathway to, hey, you can be a special education teacher. We're going to make it easy and seamless.
I don't want to cut you short, but we do have a caller on the line. Shaniqua from Dover, you have a question?
Hi, yes. I just have a quick question. Hi, Governor Myers. Thank you for taking my call. I am Mrs. Miles. I'm a parent and advocate here in Delaware, and I just wanted to know what administration is doing to make sure schools are truly supporting students, especially those dealing with trauma or discrimination, and holding districts accountable when they fail to protect or educate our kids.
Thank you, Shaniqua. I appreciate it. There should be no inequities in Delaware schools. That is the goal. I know that for too many families, For too many kids today, it is not a reality. I hear about it occasionally from my own kids in Brandywine School District. What we try to do at the state is provide avenue and resources for those who are not getting what they feel like they deserve or they feel like is equitable outcomes or fair outcomes and fair services from their school or from their district, to have avenues to address that through the State Department of Education. Shaniqua,
Governor, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm so sorry. We're running out of time. And Shaniqua, thank you so much for your call. I know we kind of left this open-ended here, but we are going to have to leave it there. It has been a lively discussion. I want to thank the audience members who participated. We did leave a lot here on the table. We will be picking the conversation up on our next episode, which is happening on December 18th. Governor Matt Meyer of Delaware, thank you so much for taking all of our questions this hour. We also heard from Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne and WHYY news reporter Sarah Mueller. So thank you both for being here. Ask Governor Meyer is produced by Paige Murray Bessler, Tina Calique, and Diana Martinez are our technical engineers. At Delaware Public Media, thank you to operations manager Thomas Terry and the station's general manager, Tom Interante. Kevin McCory is our executive producer. WHYY's news director is Mark Eichmann. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager. And special thanks to the communications team at the Office of the Governor. From the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY in Philadelphia, in partnership with Delaware Public Media, I'm Shirley Min, and thank you for joining us.